So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Look at the look on the face of Mr. McMahon. He absolutely looks, his eyes look black. He looks like a soulless human being.
Oh, no.
You gotta be kidding me. Oh, that's bullshit.
Oh, come on, God.
Excuse my language.
Here are your winners, Shane and Mr. McMahon.
I apologize. Do you? It's damn sure horse manure. Look at this. Now, Mr. McMahon beat Shawn Michaels.
Well, not just Mr. McMahon. Do you realize what we have here? It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit squad.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting live from the brand new Review Away studios.
Brand new, yes, that's right. Well, is this? It's one of these studios. We have like five different audio booths in this place.
I've realized that because I've heard that this room now might actually not be used for any television production. I'm not sure.
Really?
I've been hearing contradictory things. So this might be a room that is just empty.
Okay. Well, for people who are completely lost, we have recently moved our television station, the Fight Network, over to a new office, and we're actually in a real legit TV space now that used to be housed by another TV company. So we've got actual edit suites that are made for editing. We have audio booths that are made for that were not converted from broom closets in the past.
And they have doors.
And they have soundproof doors, more importantly. So okay, well, maybe
so the days of people knocking on the glass and being just amazed that two people are talking to one another in an audio booth are over.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless they decide to do something stupid and install, I don't know, a window in here.
Right.
Today's edition, we will be chatting about Backlash 2006 from Lexington, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And this was the infamous show featuring God Way.
God teaming up with Shawn Michaels against the devil himself and the product of the devil's semen, Shane McMahon.
That's how they described it in the opening video. The product of his semen, Shane McMahon. And as much as these are the probably easiest Vince McMahon vignettes to just poke fun of, Vince McMahon was in his element during this whole build-up.
Yeah.
He was able to grab onto something that always has an emotional response, that being religion, and he just played it to the absolute Vince McMahon tilt. And I love these promos from Vince. That vignette when he went to church with Shane McMahon, I thought was awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, is there a historical backdrop to Vince McMahon and religion, the saga of Vince and religion? Do we know what type of affiliation he is?
I don't know if he is an actual subscriber of any one religion, though the story is that him and Linda actually did meet at church.
Hmm.
That was always the interesting story.
Okay.
Are you a religious person, Wei? Were you offended by any of this?
No, I mean, I can't say I am. I don't practice. My family doesn't really practice any religion. I wouldn't say we're atheists either. It's just, you know.
You're wa-theists.
No, I wouldn't say that either.
I'm a wa-theist. I believe in you.
Well, good for you. What about you, John? What are your religious practices?
Well, I went to Catholic school for elementary school and high school. And I got it all out of my system in university when we did our practicum project, church and state.
You got religion right out of your system?
Yes. Okay. I don't really identify with any one particular religion, but I am I
Church and State, by the way, let me just stop you, was our fourth year university final project where John and I worked together along with some of our other classmates. We did a dramedy about Catholic schoolboys.
Yes, and I had a lot of fun on doing that project. It was a lot of fun. There were people in our group that hated one another, but...
Oh, come on. It's a dramedy. You can't have a dramedy without some drama.
Behind-the-scenes dramedy.
Yeah, exactly.
It was drama for them and comedy for me and Wei to watch them fight.
Yes.
But I guess religion, I go once a year. I go on Christmas Eve to Mass.
Okay.
I just got I got turned off religion years ago. It just became very... The church I would go to, they started to get very extreme about things. They started, like the homily during Mass. I remember going one week where all of a sudden they start talking about, well, there's an election coming up this week. I was like, all right, where is this going? And they were like, and as Catholics, there's only one candidate that you could possibly vote for. And it became a 20-minute speech in favor of the Conservative Party. And I was like, this is not, I think, the platform that this should be addressing. And then it got more ridiculous with you know, these homilies about stem cell research and things that I just, I vehemently disagreed with what I was hearing. And I had no voice to combat this with. I was just supposed to sit here and listen to this diatribe for 20 minutes.
Now you do. Now you have.
Now I do. I got a podcast, motherfuckers.
So now you can tell people who to vote for.
Yeah, it's just listen. If you are a religious person out there, all the power to you. I think religion can be very good for some people, but don't push it onto other people and don't push it onto me, unless it is a wrestling storyline, because then it can be very entertaining. And people are always going to shit on this God angle. I cannot criticize it because I enjoyed this.
I guess my big question is, I mean, you talk about politics and religion, and we both know that Linda McMahon has since been a big part of the Republican Party. How has this angle ever come up in her race?
It hasn't, no. And nor do I feel it should. I don't think any storylines should be reflective upon... a political candidate. I mean, criticize Linda about business practices, or maybe, you know, WWE performers that have gone on to die at an early... Attack real issues, not some fucking storyline, which we got so much of in 2010 when she was running. And I don't understand that at all. But that's kind of what you get with wrestling, where it's this kind of... Well, it's presented as... It's not presented as fiction in the same sense like a soap opera is. And therefore, it's reflective that they are exploiting God. It's like, come on. If this was a fucking WWE Studios movie about a fictitious God, would they be bringing this up?
They could.
Was Arnold Schwarzenegger ever chastised for, you know, the storyline content of a movie?
I'm trying to think what movie would go against...
Predator.
Okay. In what way?
Terminator 3. The use of artificial intelligence. It's very...
Well, I just bring that up because... Because I think we know politics in campaigns and in... I guess in propaganda, you try to look for as much ammunition as you can, and I feel like Linda McMahon's career on air and her association with her family on air has more, you know, serves as more than enough ammunition for something like her.
Political races are some of the funnest stuff to watch because it's like Jersey Shore style fights. But done in a respectable forum, like on a cable news station, where it's just people calling each other names back and forth, and then we dissect what they are discussing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fun to watch.
Yeah, I'd love to. Do you think we'll ever review a political
debate? Maybe if Linda's ever running for something and in a real heated race that gets national coverage. Maybe it should be a review one week.
Sure.
Of Linda's campaign night. Because her the last campaign that she was a part of on election night, there they I'm watching CNN, and they cut to B-roll of Linda giving Jim Ross a low blow on Raw.
Uh-huh.
And then they go back to the eight-person panel on CNN talking about Jim Ross.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching this just in amazement.
Do you think that has anything – her Linda being you know so involved in the politics, do you think that has anything with the McMahons taking themselves away off of TV these past few years?
No, because I mean Shane's left the company. Vince has always kind of wanted to remove himself from television. And, I mean, he'll still be on there sporadically. I mean, he was even – do you remember that right before the election when he woke up from the coma?
Oh, yeah.
And he had the stickers and stuff on him?
On his ass, yes.
So, no. My answer would be no. I don't think they're too concerned. Let's chat about Backlash. This event was 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. A long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we started off with the video me and Wade just mentioned. Vince McMahon's promos here, it was like he was channeling Curtis Iaukea here with just his delivery for you older fans. And the theme song way, we had a Canadian band, Danko Jones with Baby Hates Me.
From Toronto.
Yes. Great. Some Canadian content here mm-hmm. on Backlash. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are the announcers for tonight, which is notable because Jim Ross ended up calling WrestleMania at a time when Joey Styles was the voice of Raw every week, and then they brought Jim Ross in for WrestleMania, then it went back to Joey Styles, and then come Backlash, it was expected it would be Joey Styles, but when you tuned in that night, they had put Jim Ross on.
Hmm. I guess one of many attempts to get JR off of the main announce team.
And 6 years later... we're in the same exact situation.
He's been decreased dramatically. He's not coming back to call every pay-per-view.
Wow. And last week's show was the 2003 Backlash where we had Coachman in there
right.
with Lawler. We go to our first matchup. It's Carlito against Chris Masters, two former tag partners, and they recapped Carlito turning on Masters with the backcracker. And Carlito comes out with his yellow shirt with an apple on it, with the tagline, do you spit or swallow?
Sure.
Classy time in the WWE.
It's clever.
You think kids were buying this shirt going to school?
Do you spit
or swallow?
I wouldn't doubt that.
I wonder how many parents bought that shirt not understanding what it meant.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you spit or swallow
your
apple?
No, could mean just that.
Yeah. Maybe we're just being dirty by assuming. It's a sexual innuendo.
It's our problem.
Maybe they were trying to resurrect this question back into American vernacular.
Hmm.
Back and forth, Carlito avoids a military press, and he ends up applying the master lock to Masters for a big pop here, turning the tables on Masters. Was Masters the babyface in all this, or was he the heel?
I'm pretty sure Carlito was the babyface.
All right, that's what I thought. Carlito hits a plancha to the floor, but Masters eventually gets the advantage as they return to the ring. He pulls him around the ring by his hair, and Jim Ross notes here, nothing fancy about Masters' offense. That was certainly the truth. Carlito counters the master lock with a roll up for a two count, and then Carlito hits a back elbow off the ropes. Then he grabs his apple, but he throws it in the air, and this distracts Chris Masters, and he takes a drop kick to the knee. Carlito hits the backcracker as Masters staggers after going into the turnbuckle, and then Carlito grabs the ropes for leverage and pins Chris Masters. 9 minutes and 59 seconds. Pretty average match.
I thought it was pretty good. It totally, my expectations were far exceeded for these two and the match that they delivered. And I think credit goes to the crowd as well, because I thought this, for the entire show, was a very hot crowd in Kentucky.
Yes, they certainly were in Kentucky. Then we go to the back, and Maria Kanellis of Ring of Honor fame
mm-hmm.
is doing her ditzy character at this point, and she goes over to the three men in the WWE title match, and she says, then she throws to fan comments, and the fans all go back and forth. Some are going for Cena, some are going for Triple H, and some are going for Edge. And then we come back to Maria, and she says, well, clearly there aren't too many Edge fans out there. After we had heard, like, equal amounts of fans backing each of the three.
Oh, she's dumb.
She's dumb. That's the gimmick. And in case you're dumb and didn't understand that, they're going to make it as painfully obvious to you that she is dumb. Lita then walks in, and she insults the fans in Kentucky, which would be a running theme throughout this show. This company sure had some disdain for these hillbillies in Kentucky.
Easy target, I suppose.
They say that they are the same people who call her a hoe and says, "I've kept my mouth shut." Maria comes back and says, "I hear that your mouth is open a lot." And Lita says that Edge will win the title, and then they'll have sex tonight, because unlike these people, she actually gets some. What a promise from a heel.
Oh, God. Yes.
We're going to win and fuck tonight.
She says the words, "We are going to have a private sex celebration." It's just a little embarrassing to watch.
Well, almost as embarrassing as their public sex celebration.
Almost.
A few months prior.
Sometimes I'm actually quite thankful for PG. The fact that I no longer have to be...
This is what's ruining the current state of wrestling.
Oh, right?
We don't get promos like this anymore.
Oh, we don't get to talk about sex for the sake of saying the word on TV anymore.
They're
what a
shame. Same people who call me a hoe. Armando Alejandro Estrada is in the ring and introduces Umaga. My God, did I miss this guy. Estrada and Umaga.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed these two together. Estrada was just such a great manager. One of the last managers that they used, and fantastic. And Umaga comes out. He had just debuted the night after WrestleMania, and here he is taking on Ric Flair. His first pay-per-view match since he had returned to the company. They replayed the debut where he attacked Flair's first night. Umaga just dominated this from start to finish. They fought on the floor, came back in the ring. He hit the Samoan spike, and he pinned Ric Flair clean 3 minutes and 28 seconds. And the announcers put over Umaga very, very strong. Can't really complain about this booking. I mean, Umaga just ran through Ric Flair.
Absolutely. And, I mean, Ric Flair is the right guy to put in the role like this because it's a relatively high-profile name. You can claim that the guy's beaten. But also, Flair, you're not losing anything by beating Ric Flair.
Flair was being set to retire anyway. This was 2006.
Yeah, exactly. I look at Umaga, and I guess we still ask today why a character like Umaga, despite being as, as 80s style and as old school as it was, why it worked so well.
I agree. Umaga, at this point, they were starting this undefeated streak for him, and it was eventually going to build up to a big program with John Cena. But this was it was interesting because we got a call this past Sunday on the Lock comparing Lord Tensai to Umaga. And I think you watched this match, and this was fresh in my head when we were talking with this caller, of just the difference here in Umaga, who is just clearly positioned as a monster and came across as such.
And I think the difference, for me at least, in Umaga and Tensai is that Umaga, this guy, has a great, stiff-looking physical style and an in-ring charisma that I haven't seen from Matt Bloom so far.
So I think it's safe to say at this point, the Umaga character in Lord Tensai, very different in presentation thus far.
But we'll see. I mean, it's still early in Tensai's run.
Do you think that the knockout finish is going to be given up on with Tensai? Because they did have him pin Cena.
Yep.
It's funny because that's how they also started Brock off, where he would knock guys out with the F5, but then they got rid of it because it was criticized.
I think it's a bit too jarring for pro wrestling. I think the only way... No, I don't see it working. I was going to say, I think the only way it could work is perhaps with even a guy like whose gimmick is to knock people out, like Chris Hero's new gimmick. But I don't think it even works for him.
It's weird because you watch another match with someone. How many spots are there where you hit a guy and he goes down?
Exactly.
Like, that should technically be a knockout. Like, you don't know when you should react. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think it works for pro wrestling.
Yeah.
It's not even a case of educating your audience. I just don't think you're ever going to get to that point where people accept it. Like, they do in MMA, where when a guy is out, that's it. Mm-hmm. You know that is the end of the fight. We got a CD ad back when WWE put out CDs. Reckless Intent featuring a track from Saliva.
At least one.
Of course.
This was also, I guess I didn't realize just how current a lot of the current, the current roster was, at this time. Cause we had Punk's old theme, we had Randy Orton's old theme, we had, what else?
It was all pretty much like rock music, right?
Yeah.
The POD was on this for Rey Mysterio's theme. Some classics.
Mm-hmm.
Payable on Death.
Yeah.
I hated that.
Booyaka.
I thought that was one of the worst names for a band.
Why?
Payable on Death.
They're a Christian band, speaking of religion.
I remember one time I was in the car with my friends and POD came on. And I was like, oh, POD, worst name ever. And my friend Ziggy is in the back. He's like, oh, POD, I hate Puddle of Mud. So dumb. Vince McMahon is with Shane in his locker room, and he's checking out his arms. Vince had the most ridiculous tan I've ever seen on one individual. If this man gets skin cancer, these will be the screen grabs people post to accompany that story confirming Vince McMahon has skin cancer.
Well, this was Vince living out his fantasy of becoming a Hulkamania.
This was at a time when Muscle and Fitness had contacted him to do a photo shoot, and he got in ridiculous Vince McMahon shape, and everywhere he went on TV, he brought this giant-sized cover of Muscle and Fitness with him on it, without a shirt, and he maintained this look well after that photo shoot. Vince has always been a jacked-up dude, but this was the peak of Vince's Scott Putski fascination.
This was his Playboy cover.
It was. I think he got an erection looking at it.
Yeah.
This was just watching him. It was the contrast to Shane, like a very average looking white man who wears a suit most days.
Uh-huh.
A slightly overweight, pale individual.
Yeah.
Next to Vince, this guy who's just orange, fucking orange with gray hair.
He's like the Orange Hulk.
This was in standard definition.
Yeah.
Like this was just a ridiculous looking man, like not even a human looking man, someone that there was a cord that came out of him and you plugged in to light up. That's what he looked like.
Okay. Wow.
And no testing whatsoever.
No, not for the boss.
No. They talk about the match tonight, and Vince says, it's not a handicap match tonight because Shawn Michaels has a partner. And he tells Shane, tonight, you leave God to me. He's going to take care of God. And he says, there's nothing God can do that he cannot. And he pours water onto the ground, and then he walks on it. He says, see, this is easy. He's walking on water. And then he picks up a loaf of bread, and he breaks it. And he throws it away. And then he throws this fish away. And then all of a sudden, from off screen, all these pieces of bread are thrown back at Vince. And he says, holy mackerel. Horrible comedy. This I could not even make up on my best day. And then Vince walks off. Shane goes to drink his water. But somehow, it's been turned to wine.
Yeah.
This is horrendously bad.
Awful TV. Yes. Awful TV. But you know what? Come to expect this level of
this is action. WWE clever vignettes at their finest.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, subtlety is out the window. Let's just be as overt as we possibly can here and make as many God jokes as we can.
When do we get a DVD just compiling all these terrible backstage skits? We can get this. We can get, every Katie Vick segment, every Kane segment for that matter, Shaniqua and the Bashams. When do we get that?
Oh, I was shocked that we didn't get Vince McMahon on the toilet saying, holy shit. Or maybe going through a ravine and seeing these beavers that are just without a home. And he could look up and say, God damn it. Like a beaver dam.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know.
There are endless ones. I've got 25 more here.
Okay.
We get a video recap of our next feud with Trish and Mickie James, where Mickie James won the title at WrestleMania. This was the infamous WrestleMania match where they were having a great match, and then Mickie fucked up the finish, trying to do the Stratisfaction off the ropes. And it ended with a, you fucked up.
I don't exactly remember, but wasn't Mickie getting a babyface reaction this time, despite being the heel?
Yes, I think so. I think people were getting into Mickie at this point, but Trish was still the babyface here. So we go to Mickie James and Trish for the women's title. Trish blows a kiss towards her to start. She uses the Matrish and then into the head scissors. Trish misses a spin kick and then kicks Mickie right in the face. And then they go into the turnbuckle. Trish gets onto the second rope and starts delivering punches and gets knocked to the floor and starts grabbing her right arm. And there's this big delay. Trish gets back into the ring. James starts choking her with her headband, and a DQ is called at 4 minutes and 7 seconds, and Trish definitely fucked up her right elbow here, and I guess they had to call the audible here and call the match early because...
it was a legit injury.
Yeah, this was a legit injury. So Mickie keeps the title here by DQ. I imagine that was the finish they were planning in terms of Mickie keeping the title.
Mm-hmm.
But 4 minutes here, I think definitely the injury kind of hampered this one. So that's about that. Maria comes back on, says she made a mistake earlier that Carlito had actually won the match. I missed this.
I missed this too. I missed the mistake.
Yeah, I don't even know. So Shawn Michaels then walks in, and Maria asks if God will show up tonight, and Michaels has to do this, like, straight promo, talking about this ridiculous subject with this ditz of an announcer, and says, "The Lord is with me tonight, as he always is, and I'm going to use the gifts that he has given me to the best of my abilities." And it is a handicap match, and he ends it stating that Lexington has two words for the McMahons, and this was at a time when Triple H and Michaels, they never interacted on TV, but each were doing these DX hints at this point to build up for their DX reunion later in the year.
Has Shawn ever publicly spoken about this angle after the fact?
I'm sure he's been asked about it, but I don't know. I don't know how you could take it too offensively. I mean, it was so over the top. Are you really offended by this? But it's religion. People always tend to have a short fuse when it comes to, you know...
Oh, well, if people are offended by this, I wouldn't criticize them for that. I could totally see people getting offended over something like this.
How dare you make fun of our religion?
Yeah.
Come on.
You say that in jest, but I mean, absolutely. I don't know. Religion is different for
Have you
for
ever
everybody.
Read the Bible? I've legit read the Bible, the whole Bible.
Okay.
There's some ridiculous stuff in there. More ridiculous.
Hold on a second. Yeah.
Listen, what we just made fun of with Vince, that was all presented seriously in the
Bible. I understand, but I don't think you should go on a podcast and just, you know, outright criticize the Bible. I mean, sure.
I'm not criticizing the Bible. I'm saying there's some wacky stuff in there.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that there's crazy stuff in any religion text. Any religious text, but it means different things for different people, and I think we should respect that.
It means different things. I just think that it's, people have every right to use religion in any context they want.
Absolutely, and people have the right to be offended if they don't like what they're seeing.
Well, I would say if you had watched television, you knew what you were getting on this pay-per-view. There was going to be lots of blasphemy on this pay-per-view.
Sure.
So part of the onus is on you for buying this pay-per-view. We go to the next match. I'm going to get so much hatred, I think, after this podcast. There's going to be some anger, I think. Shelton Benjamin against Rob Van Dam here. Intercontinental title versus Money in the Bank briefcase. Benjamin was the IC champ at this point, and Van Dam had just won the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 22. And to start off, Ross and Lawler joke about the Dr. Heine sketch from the year prior when Vince had mocked JR's legitimate medical surgery with a sketch on television. I found that to be way more offensive than anything on this show.
I don't remember the sketch.
Don't you remember this when they did the mock surgery where Vince was pulling stuff out of him?
Okay.
And then he was like, oh, you had your head up your ass. Alex Greenfield was part of that segment.
Oh, yeah. Great.
And Ross just says, yes, what great television that was. This was back when ECW chants still existed at WWE shows, and Rob Van Dam received a tremendous amount of them. The crowd loved Van Dam here.
This was coming off of the One Night Stand pay-per-view that
no,
previous...
No, no, just before... Oh, sorry, from the prior year, but just before they do the second one.
Mm-hmm.
So Van Dam here, extremely over in Lexington, Kentucky. Shelton Benjamin, they announced his mama wasn't in his corner.
Okay.
Yeah. His mama.
Yeah, his mama.
No relation to Brodus's mama.
No, no.
Mrs. Finley. Benjamin rolls out of the way for a rolling thunder early on, and then RVD hits a plancha to the floor. Benjamin did this leap to the top rope, over the top rope, and then Sunset flips RVD to the floor to get the heat. They went into near falls with Benjamin countering the rolling thunder by getting to his feet and hitting a Samoan drop. Van Dam fought Benjamin off in the corner. He leaps to the top and hits a vertical suplex to Van Dam to get a two count. There was an abdominal stretch, which actually got a Joe Stecker reference from Jim Ross. Van Dam came back with a kick off the ropes, hit a spinning heel kick, and then a rolling thunder for a two count. These two really hit their stride, and I think this match kind of was given extra time, I think, because of the last match. Finish came with Van Dam countering a powerbomb with a Hurricane Rana. Then a back elbow was hit to Van Dam, which knocks Van Dam into the referee. But Van Dam responds by getting the briefcase. He takes it from Shelton, who had grabbed it from the floor, and hits a Van Daminator into the briefcase to Shelton, and then hits the frog splash from the top. 18 minutes and 32 seconds, and the crowd went nuts for this finish. They loved this match, and a really strong match between these two.
I thought it was great, and I'd go as far as to say, you know, one of the best matches I've seen from either man. I thought flawless execution of everything they tried. They were given a lot of time, a lot of creative spots, and the crowd was with them the entire time. So really good. One of the great surprises on this show.
Oh, and then we took a drastic turn on this pay-per-view. They plugged the Danko Jones tune, and then we go on to the video. We already saw Carlito and Chris Masters, two tag partners that have found a riff. And now we go to Kane and the Big Show.
Mm.
Former partners now feuding.
Do Kane tag teams ever turn out well? He always turns on his partners or has something done to him. He can't keep a friend.
Well, he's a tortured individual, and this carries over. They lost the tag titles the night after WrestleMania to the Spirit Squad, and this was at the point when Kane was doing the May 19th catchphrase, a date that you still hear wrestling fans bring up to this day. A fantastic marketing campaign for See No Evil at the time.
Did it make anybody want to see the movie, though?
Listen, everyone remembered that, at least when the movie came out. Okay. And I would say of all the WWE movies, that was the one I enjoyed the most.
Mm.
Campy horror movie with Kane.
We should do a review of that.
Yeah, I saw that in the theater.
Maybe on May 19th. We'll
oh, that's right. We've got May 19th coming up.
Yeah.
It's an annual event. Kane hates when people say that date, and this eventually leads to Big Show choke slamming Kane reluctantly. And then we go to the back, and Todd Grisham is with the Big Show and talks about Kane's emotional trauma. And Big Show's eye is all bandaged and bruised up, and he doesn't see the big deal about a movie. And he says, I was in a movie, The Water Boy, but I didn't talk about it all the time. Who cares? He says, we all have problems, but Kane crossed the line, and tonight, it's an eye for an eye. And then Lillian Garcia introduces Kane, but she's frightened because she was attacked by Kane on television. And that leads us to Kane and the Big Show. There was actually a light chant of May 19th by the audience to start in Lexington. We saw a military press and by Big Show, and then he would chop Kane. Kane got the advantage, working the right arm very, very slow. Ross brings up, he says he's had some unique interactions with Kane over the years. Very unique.
There's an understatement.
Yep. This match I just thought was all wrong. You had Kane doing like scientific wrestling with the arm of Big Show. He then hit a big boot to the gut of the Big Show. Show then caught Kane off the top to hit a fallaway slam. Kane countered a choke slam with an attempt at a short arm DDT, which looked horrendous. Crowd just booed it. Then Big Show goes for a big boot, and there was about 2 feet of air between the boot and the face of Big Show. Ross just gives up. He says, this has not been a pretty match. And Show holds his finger out, and he's going to go for Kane's eye. He's going to poke his eye out. And Show then gets kicked to the floor. The lights go out, and there's a voiceover saying May 19th. But it's Kane's voice, as Kane is in the ring, being tortured by his own voice. And the voice says, you know what happened on that day. And Kane is losing his mind. He starts hitting himself. And Big Show shows remorse here. And he grabs a chair and hits him into the head as the lights come up. And Big Show is all upset that he gave a chair shot to Kane to put him out of his misery. And Big Show just leaves. And the crowd boos this entire debacle. And then Kane rises with a smile and laughs. 10 minutes and 6 seconds of shit. This sucked.
Yeah, this was no good. This was exactly what you would expect from Kane versus Big Show and then some. It was slow.
He didn't even give people a finish.
No, it was slow and had all this other fucked up bullshit at the end. I guess if you enjoyed it for the camp value, you could have.
There was none, though. I didn't get any camp value.
Well, the voice and the red lights turning on all of a sudden and them trying to act and employ psychology in their matchup. I was not into this. I was just lost, to be honest with you.
Vince McMahon is in his office and Candice Michelle walks in coughing. And she asks what that smell is, because the fish had been left over. And she tells Vince that she has a chest cold. And I'm not going to describe what happens here. Here's just the segment.
Well, Mr. McMahon, sorry, but I have this really bad chest cold. And, you know, with you being God, I thought maybe you could lay a healing hand on me.
Yeah, let's try that.
Okay.
In the name of...
Mr. McMahon, it's a chest cold, so just a little lower, please.
Oh, right. Okay, then. Why don't we try... You have beautiful shoulders. Let's try this. Yeah, is it... Can you feel the...
No, just a little lower.
Maybe around that tiny little waist of yours is a feeling. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, just a little bit higher.
A little higher?
Yeah. Keep going.
Heal this woman's breath. Heal this woman's voluptuous breath.
I feel it through my mouth.
You feel it?
Run it through my
breath. I feel it too. No. All right, let's go. Let's go. Our match is next. Let's go. What are you doing? I'm just healing Candace. You can heal Candace later. Let's go.
Okay.
Let's go. Damn it.
Now,
he does have the power. He's got the power. I believe it.
What the hell was that?
So Shane comes in as Vince is... I don't know, giving this woman an orgasm, and says that their match is next. They cut away to a deadpan Jim Ross, who just says, what the hell was that?
This poor man having to act, having to be the first visual response to any of this for the audience.
Only Jim Ross could do this.
Any dreams that Jim Ross has ever had of getting any type of mainstream job in any other field dies with segments like these.
This was just over the top ridiculous.
Yeah. What are they parodying here?
That he could heal.
Yeah, but what? Okay. And how does that relate to giving a woman an orgasm?
Well, that's how she was reacting. She was being touched by a superhuman spirit that was penetrating her soul.
Okay. So, but why is that supposed to be sexual? Why is something like this supposed to be sexual?
Because she's having the, I don't know, Vince's
this
hand.
This stuff is like healing. Televangelical healing is never sexual.
I don't know. I thought that's what they were going for here.
Yeah, they were. I just... anyway. We don't have to think about it that much.
There was some real bad shit on this pay-per-view. Then we got the video setting up God's debut with the WWE. He was on a limited date schedule. Was not going on the road. He's only doing pay-per-views. And obviously the heavy religious overtones for this feud with the Michaels match at WrestleMania, including a pre-match prayer with Vince and his family, and Ross saying that Satan lives as Vince was wheeled out after WrestleMania. And then this led to television where Vince started his own religion, McMahonism. And then they went to the church. There was a part where he was going into the ring and the pyro went off to represent God. So the McMahons come out and Vince goes to introduce God. Calls him the Holy Roller, the Hipster from Heaven, and the Man Upstairs. And God comes out to like a spoof of the model Rick Martel's theme with the opening like harp. And a spotlight comes down the ring to represent God. And then Vince stops him and says, no, we're going to do this WWE style. And it becomes this funk entrance. This funk music comes on. And Vince is just going crazy dancing here. He makes the referee check God and make sure he has no foreign objects. I can't say I hated this. Vince was so good here.
This was all Vince commanding the segment, and he was actually very funny, very entertaining.
And it was so just hilarious to watch the lack of personality Shane has in contrast that anyone would have in contrast to Vince here at his peak. But it was like just so ridiculous here. And Vince says that before the night is over, Shawn Michaels and God are going to go straight to hell. And Shawn comes out, he punches Vince, and the match begins. Vince and Shane against Michaels and God. And Michaels and Shane fight on the entrance ramp at the early part of the match. Shane takes a back body drop after a pile driver attempt to Shawn. And then Shane gets thrown into the entrance to one of the setups at the entrance. And then hits a cross body to Vince as they go off the stage and through a bunch of tables on the floor. And McMahon ends up opening up Shawn with a chair shot. And then it leads to the McMahons getting the heat. They return to the ring. Shane misses a top rope elbow drop. Vince ends up whipping Shawn with a belt. He gets a trash can and rams it into the head of Michaels. And then he gets on the microphone and he mocks God for his choice of partner. And he announces that God has left the building. God has walked out on Shawn Michaels.
You saying, where are you going, God? Where are you going?
Maybe he was going to TNA or the UFC. Shawn catches the worst super kick ever thrown by Vince McMahon, and then responds with a running forearm. They built up. Shawn hit a kip up, ducked a chair shot from Shane, and Shane took out Vince with an unprotected chair shot. Shawn then fired up on Shane, hit a top rope elbow drop, and the audience was just going crazy here for Shawn's comeback. Ross calls Shane the heir apparent to the McMahon Empire. He was wrong on that account. The heir apparent was going to be in the main event tonight.
Mm.
And probably the other heir apparent wrote half of this stuff.
Yeah.
Michaels hits a super kick to Shane. Then Vince does the crotch chop to Vince as the fans are chanting DX. And then Shawn pulls two tables out from under the ring, lays Vince and Shane on them in the ring, and then he pulls out this gigantic ladder, climbs to the top of the ladder, but then turns around and jumps to the floor onto the Spirit Squad, which have come out that no one saw.
This was really well planned.
Oh, yeah. You totally thought this guy was jumping to the floor and no one was there to catch him.
A total surprise, because they kept the Spirit Squad out of frame the entire time. So he's diving, and you're thinking, he's lost his mind diving to the floor.
Then there were five members of the Spirit Squad who were able to get the advantage of Shawn at this point and help out the McMahons. And Michaels gets pulled into the ring, and they did this move, the Spirit Squad, where they would grab the arms and legs of Shawn, tossed him way up into the air, and then he landed through a table seamlessly here. And then Vince pins Shawn Michaels at 19 minutes and 57 seconds. And at the count of three, Jim Ross just yells, "Bullshit! Bullshit!" And then apologizes for his language. This wasn't even the best call, though, because as the Spirit Squad are posing with the McMahons, Lawler says, "It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit Squad." Awesome line by Jerry Lawler.
Very nice.
And
very nice.
Celebrate at the entrance, and the McMahons are held up on the shoulders of the Spirit Squad. For all the craziness of this storyline, I enjoyed this match a lot. Shawn was awesome in this match.
Yeah, his high work rate really carried this entire
Shawn
match.
Shawn carried this whole thing.
There was some very good use of foreign objects and gimmicks here. It was a lot of fun. Shawn is definitely the man, but credit goes to the McMahons as well, and the bookers. And, of course, God, for working a great match.
You got to thank the man upstairs who came downstairs for this pay-per-view match.
Yes.
So Todd Grisham is in the back, and he welcomes the most controversial champion in WWE history, John Cena. And 6 years ago, Todd Grisham says, "The crowd doesn't seem to be 100% behind you." And John Cena says, "Oh, thanks, Todd. Thanks. You're watching the show, I can see." And it was just, I found him just as unlikable here as at any point.
No, it wasn't just you. It was the entire audience. I mean, 6 years ago, he was already fielding questions about this divided audience. People have been sick of John Cena for over 6 years.
And he cuts his promo about, "When all is said and done, there will be one voice that stands tall. And that's Lillian Garcia." And he just talks and talks. Basically says he's going to win. But sure as fuck didn't convince me.
Oh, it convinced me.
That he's going to win?
Yeah, because he never loses.
That's
even back at this time.
Jim Ross says that Trish's shoulder was put back into place and had an MRI. And I thought we were going to the main event, but Matt Stryker comes out. And Stryker comes out to the ring. And Lawler points out that he had a cross-eyed teacher while he was in school who was fired because he couldn't control his pupils. Jerry Lawler and that joke book that we're all the benefactors of.
Yeah, yeah. He's in the wrong field, I think.
He should be. Imagine Jerry Lawler doing stand-up.
No, I don't.
It would all be plagiarism.
I'd rather not. I think he should be writing kids' joke books.
Maybe. That's what's fueled his comedy.
Yeah.
Stryker gets into the ring and says there's another miracle beyond the McMahons tonight, and that is the fact that there is an intelligent person in Kentucky, which are known for their fried chicken, illegally recruited basketball players, but not famous for being an educated state. Wouldn't it suck living in a place where that's what everyone thinks of you? These back-end hillbillies. That's what every single person in Kentucky. I mean, that is right there at the core of prejudice. Just paintbrushing an entire people as one distinct personality.
Oh, absolutely. It would suck.
How do you deal with this when people...
How do I deal with it?
We'll characterize, you know, Asians as being bad drivers or good at math. Do you take it in stride or is there a little resentment when people just associate?
Well, whenever it's directed at me, it's usually as a joke. It's, you know, I know nobody's ever doing it seriously. But do you mean if somebody were to come
to Asia? If WWE held a pay-per-view in Hong Kong and they said, "Thank God we made it alive here on the bus."
Well, the thing is, like, anything to do with pro wrestling, in the context of pro wrestling, I know not to take seriously. It's just, the whole thing is just such a farce. The whole idea of pro wrestling itself, that it's not like somebody's stating this as a fact.
Goes outside of wrestling. I mean, Kentucky is, when you say Kentucky, that's what people think of, this stereotype. And I'm sure there's lots of intelligent people in Kentucky.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, only stupid people believe in those stereotypes, though. So I think it says more about the people that are saying those things than people from Kentucky themselves.
Well, this segment certainly was stupid. We had Matt Stryker bring out Eugene, and he gives him a piece of chalk to write on his blackboard, which already states Matt Stryker on the board, and Matt Stryker turns his back around for Eugene to write, I don't know, and...
He wrote, Matt Stryker loves poop.
That's what he wrote, and then this started a Matt Stryker, you love poop chant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then where does the segment go from here?
It actually fell lower, because Eugene then started picking his nose, and they did a close-up of this. And it climaxed with Eugene putting his finger into Matt Stryker's mouth. This is one of the worst segments I've ever seen in WWE history.
I made the terrible mistake of watching this while I was eating.
Oh.
Terrible. Let's move on.
They air a video for the main event. Pretty much the story is they've all traded wins on TV leading into this. Everyone's hot going into this. Mm-hmm. Everyone's beating everybody. John Cena defending the WWE title against Triple H and Edge. And Jim Ross notes that this date, April 30th, is the anniversary of superstar Billy Graham defeating Bruno Sammartino for the WWF title. Probably on a card that Dominic DiNucci was on in Baltimore. Uncle Leo. And Edge walks out to the floor at the start as Hunter and Cena just take turns going back and forth. And then they go to the floor, they grab Edge, and each of them sends Edge into the announce table over and over again. We continue onwards here. Cena goes to the five-knuckle shuffle, but as he goes into the ropes, Lita pulls the top rope down and Cena goes to the floor. Then later, Edge puts a sleeper onto Hunter, but Cena comes in and puts both of them onto his shoulders. Edge gets off and he spears John Cena after teasing the double FU, which I guess was a spot they probably just saved for later, because when John Cena and Edge did a three-way a few years later at WrestleMania with Big Show, they did that spot with the double FU with Big Show and Edge on Cena's shoulders.
That is insane. They're really taking advantage of one of Cena's actual strengths. That being his strength.
I missed the exact spot, but Hunter just juiced like a faucet on the floor.
I believe it was...
Is it a monitor?
It was something to do with something on the outside, I believe.
Well, there was a big... I think there was some big deal coming out of this, because in the state of Kentucky, they did not allow blading, and they also didn't allow wrestlers to go into the crowd. And the WWE was warned about this before, so they responded by having Michael's juice. They had Hunter juice a ridiculous amount. And just for the hell of it, Edge took a chair shot to the head and fell over the barricade into the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it was clearly the WWE just saying, yeah, what are you going to do about it? We saw an STF by John Cena onto a bloody Triple H who reached the ropes. Then he counters the FU. Then Cena counters the pedigree and then into the STF again. Then Cena goes for the FU onto the ropes, but Hunter dumps them onto the mat. Lita comes into the ring with a chair and runs at Hunter, who gives a spine buster to Lita. And then he goes to the floor, grabs a sledgehammer. Edge cuts him off with a spear. Then Cena goes for the FU to Edge, but Hunter low blows him. And he goes for the pedigree. Cena counters it by grabbing the legs of Hunter, and he teases a catapult into the ropes, but instead just rolls over on top of Hunter and gets the surprise pin, 17 minutes and 35 seconds, and they played up afterwards, Cena out-wrestling Hunter. I thought this match was great.
Excellent. Yeah, really, really good match. Great back-and-forth action, good spots.
Crowd was awesome.
Good sequences. Yeah, really good.
And John Cena won this match, right? Because the post-match, I swear to God, I had to rewind to make sure Hunter had not won. Because he takes out the referee, he takes out Edge, he lays out Cena with a sledgehammer, crotch chops Cena to a big pop, and then he goes up the ramp, and the camera just stays on Hunter going up the ramp and posing at the entrance as a heel.
Yeah, that was a question that I had throughout the entire match, was whether or not Hunter was in fact a heel throughout this entire
match. They were on the road to turning him here with DX coming back.
Okay.
But it seemed that took precedence over your champion, who I thought looked like shit here after this match. He just won.
Yes, and of course the excuse is that you have to, keep your heat for Hunter. Hunter can't lose too much.
No, of course not.
But that's absolutely ridiculous, I thought. And, well, it's Triple H. What else do you expect, right?
So, overall, there was some great stuff on this show. I thought the main event and even the Michaels match I thought were really solid. Benjamin and Van Damme was great.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also some bad stuff. Big Show and Kane was as bad as any pay-per-view match you'll see. And the Matt Stryker shit, ugh.
Skippable.
Very skippable.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this show, though, a 7 out of 10 because I enjoyed the majority of the in-ring stuff on this show.
As did I. I had pretty low expectations going into the show, thinking that, you know, it's not a very memorable show, save for that God stuff.
That's all that's remembered.
But in terms of in-ring quality, there were some really good matches on this, so I give it a 7.5.
All right. Let's head over to the feedback right now and see what you guys had to say about it, and we'll start off with Alan Jones. The main event delivered, as it should, but there was also a number of disappointments. Trish's injury put an end to what could have been a good women's match. I can't really fault them for that. The biggest disappointment is that they cynically booked God into a match, knowing that fans would tune in to see something. But instead, we just got a regular handicap match, and not a very good one at that. That's the very definition of bait and switch. The IC Money in the Bank and main event were good. Everything else can be tossed aside. I think it would be very tough to argue that one to your cable company that God did not show up. Just imagine explaining this to a Rogers representative that, okay, here's the storyline. They were promoting God, and we just weren't happy with what they delivered.
I can't imagine anybody complaining to their cable provider for the WWE.
I would have done it as a joke. Yeah,
I know you
recorded it.
Yes.
That would have been awesome. We did not get the second coming.
I don't know if you can call this a bait and switch, though. The whole storyline was that...
promising? They were like, what did you expect here?
Well, the whole storyline was that Vince was just using this as an excuse for a handicap match, and that's exactly what they delivered. Zach Volk, I somewhat enjoyed this pay-per-view, but overall, a weak card. The RVD-Shelton match was solid. I was a huge RVD fan from back in the late 90s, and I was always shocked to see that the WWE didn't do more with him. Cena winning in the main event was less tired as it would become in the following handful of years, but far from a surprise. This event only has any identity because of the McMahon vs. God and HBK match and storyline. The match became sort of a clusterfuck with the Spirit Squad coming out and the whole flow to the match seeming ragged. But as an atheist, I really enjoyed the storyline. I was a huge HBK fan in the 90s, but the returning born-again Christian HBK was such a disappointment for me from a character standpoint. His matches were still outstanding, of course, though. The best of it all was the logic of putting the McMahons over HBK teamed with his imaginary friend. The WWE could have gone the safer route and had HBK overcome the odds, but it worked so much better to have the McMahon screw HBK over. I would give this show a 5 out of 10. The McMahon vignettes leading up to the show were fun too, so I enjoyed the pre-match video.
Yeah, I think that was the only finish you could go to. I mean, what would be the need for Hunter if Michaels beat these two on his own?
Yeah, I suppose. Here. I was a little surprised by it simply because of how over the top they were with that God thing, and I could see them giving Michaels the win and God the win just to really, you know, appease that audience.
So the God gets the comeback, and
yeah,
you got to keep.
Or the disciple of God gets the comeback.
Aaron Petrowicz. Definitely an up-and-down show. Umaga versus Ric Flair should have been a squash match on television. Chris Masters' entrance may have taken longer than the great Khali walk into the ring. Congratulations to Maria for fucking up the winner of the match right before her segment. Unfortunate injury for Trish as the match with her and Mickie James was surprisingly a decent one until the injury. McMahon and Michaels was a glorified spot fest that seconded as a piece of shit. The sunset flip to powerbomb combo Benjamin hit killed RVD. The only pay-per-view quality matches were RVD Shelton and the main event. Overall, I give this pay-per-view a 5 out of 10.
Alan Gaynor, so God knows showed the pay-per-view. What? Who would have
thought? I mean, Sid is God. That's Sid's gimmick to no-show.
Oh, okay. Where are your scissors, God? Did you forget your scissors?
He uses a cross.
Who would have thought that HBK would find a less reliable partner than Marty Jannetty? I remember at the time I thought they were going to bring in Henry Godwin, what? As I believe they had signed into a contract back in 2006. Backlash had a great history of overperforming. A lot of years it looked like a so-so show. But then they finally delivered. They really delivered. 2000, 2004, and 2007 were all excellent. Unfortunately, not even an appearance from God himself would have brought this show to that level.
Oh, Henry Godwin. Henry O. Godwin.
Yeah.
That was very clever.
Yeah.
OG. All right, we go over here. There was only one match that stood out, the handicap match. Seeing that spotlight follow God down the aisle is exemplary of McMahon's behavior and lack of respect for anything and everything, but goddamn hilarious. I enjoy that irony right there. I was also surprised that Michaels agreed to it. Also, big ups to you guys for reviewing the show, since I believe there are some diehard Christians on the board that might get emotionally upset at the very thought of such blasphemy. Well, I'm sure I've offended them by then, but listen, everyone... Everyone has a right to an opinion, and if you are a religious person, then, you know, more power to you. But you know what you're getting into listening to a show like this, where God was summoned by Vince McMahon to be part of a wrestling pay-per-view. You kind of got to have thick skin.
Kevin Kittredge, I'm agnostic, darn near atheist, but really wanted to see Sean being pummeled throughout the match and try to make it over to his corner, at which point Sean tags the turnbuckle and suddenly is completely refreshed. It's as if God has taken over his body and he's a house of fire. Is this scenario ridiculous? Yes, but damn it, I really would have enjoyed it.
Alexander Rios. To me, it was yet another mid-2000s WWE pay-per-view where they are trying so hard to push the envelope with the horrendous God angle, not realizing the Attitude Era ended about 5 years previous. Personally, I'm an agnostic, so it didn't offend me, but a few friends that had watched the show with me who do believe in God did try to take it in stride. But at the same time, it was a bit over the line with, as Joey Styles would later say, mocking God. And as Jim Ross would say in this very show, this is bullshit. As far as matches themselves, the only one that sticks out is a triple threat between Cena, Triple H, and Edge, as already Cena was getting hate despite being slightly edgier than he is today. Edge starting to come into his own as a main event heel, and Triple H about to reform DX with Shawn Michaels. Putski Award goes to Chris Masters for a 5 out of 10 show, in my opinion.
Let's go to Joao from Portugal. This show was just an average show. The main event in RVD versus Shelton was good, but everything else was pretty much what you would see on Raw. The handicap match, which they could have done so many creative things with, didn't deliver. 5 out of 10.
I was actually at this event. I have never gone back to watch it again, but thought I'd share some memories. There was a dark match with Goldust and someone. I think Goldust won. I don't recall the first match. No one liked the squash of Flair. The women's match is fuzzy as well, but I remember my wife saying that this was a good time to get a beer. RVD versus Shelton was a good match. Really liked the Rolling Thunder into a Samoan drop. No one was into the Kane and Big Show, even less after that DQ finish. Waste of time. Most people were laughing at the God stuff. Check him for hidden weapons. Sean carried them to a decent match. Sean jumping off the ladder onto the predictable Spirit Squad run-in was the memorable thing on the whole show. Really enjoyed the main event. They rammed Edge's head onto the table, which was a good spot. Really a solid match. My section was mixed with moms and their sons and guys around my age, so even then you could hear the cheers and boos for Cena. Hunter posed for the crowd on the ramp after the show went off the air. Not the greatest show ever, but a very good main event and IC Championship match.
And finally, from Chris Coppolin, Masters and Carlito was a decent match and the right guy went over. Umaga and Flair was short but got over the point that Umaga was a monster. Trish versus Mickey was leading up to what seemed to be a good match until the unfortunate injury. RVD and Shelton was a great match and personally my match of the night. Kane and Big Show was horrendous and only used to sell See No Evil. A pointless match. The McMahons versus HBK and God himself was exactly what I expected. A handicap match where a light shining from the ceiling was Michael's partner. The main event delivered and really saved the show from being a complete waste of time. Triple H's blade job was phenomenal, and all three men worked their tails off. 6 out of 10 for Backlash.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for your feedback. You can always leave them on our message board at lawradio.proboards.com. You can also just type in reviewaway.com, and that will take you to the message boards. It's free to sign up, and way, we have added archives.
Yes, the Review Away archives are available right now if you go to the board. Please sign up to the board, and if you have a membership, I suppose, a free membership, you can just log in and you can view all of our archives, soon to be updated with, I believe, the...
The Law, Review A Raw, Impact, Interviews, Marathon Shows, everything will be up there. And all you have to do is sign up for free, and you get the entire back catalog. What a great deal.
Pretty good deal, I'd say.
I'm downloading them all as we speak.
Overload our servers.
Yes, go for it. All right, that's going to wrap us up for another week, folks. Next week on this show, What are we going to review, Wei? I guess you chose this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
All right. I'm trying to think what would be a good show to review. What promotion do you feel like, Wei? And I'll go from there. What are you feeling like? We've seen the depths of WCW. We've seen God. We've reviewed early 2000 WWE recently. What do you feel like watching this weekend? What do you feel like after a long work week going home to watch more of? There's lots of companies out there.
Is this a trick question?
No, I don't have anything picked, so I'm using you as guidance.
Well, why don't we go to the I just lost audio here.
All right, we're gonna go to the request thread and see what people want.
Great radio.
Yeah, this is real. I'm scanning through here. Ooh. Do you feel like watching a 1990 WCW pay-per-view?
Nope.
No? So that's
sure,
what we
not?
Should review.
All right.
All right. We are going to review WCW Capital Combat from May of 1990 featuring RoboCop.
Oh, great. Did we not do this one already?
We have not done this one.
Didn't we do something with RoboCop?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. Well,
do you not want to review this? We can review something else.
I don't know if I'd feel any different about anything else that we would have to watch. So, okay. RoboCop.
We could watch something good.
No.
Maybe Capital Combat will surprise.
RoboCop, I'm actually looking forward to.
Okay. Capital Combat 1990 as we enter the month of May to commemorate this, which took place, this is the confirmation we need to do this, on May 19th of 1990.
Cool. Wonderful.
Excellent. So that's going to be coming up next week. In the meantime, folks, go hit us up, liveaudiowrestling.com, reviewaway.com to go to the message board, sign up for free, check out the archives, and interact with other Law listeners. And then we'll be back on Friday with Review and Impact with Nate Milton, The Law on Sunday night for your chance to win lunch with Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness. And taking us out, Wei, are the sounds of
God himself.
God.
Yeah.
Singing.
Sure.
All right. Here it is. God himself.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet. I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still. When he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time. Run on. For a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Praise be the name of Prince, a king.